Blog Talk Radio.
All right, ladies, buckle up. It's showtime.
You are the worst person I know. I think what I hate most about you is your textbook liberal agenda, how we should legalize pot, man, how big business is crushing the underclass, how homelessness is the biggest tragedy in America. Well, what have you done to help? I work down at the soup kitchen. Never seen you down there. You want to help? Grab a ladle. And by the way, driving a Prius doesn't make you Jesus Christ. Oh, wait, you don't believe in Jesus Christ, or any religion for that matter, because religion is for idiots. Well, who the hell are you to talk down to anyone? But you know what? I can forgive all of that, all of it, if you weren't such a bore. That's the worst of it. You're just a big, sad bore.
Welcome to the show, everybody. It's Teresa on the radio on this Wacky Wednesday. Oh, man, oh, man, oh, man. Oh, man, oh, man, oh, man. 1 minute after the hour, June the 20th, 2012. Man, oh, man, oh, man, oh, man. Now, for anyone out there who thinks that I am far, I'm one of those guys who go to any limits to avoid patting himself on the back. Well, you'd be dead freaking wrong. I pat myself on the back. I called it. I won't even play the audio. I won't go that far. Just listen to yesterday's show. That's all you have to do. Is listen to yesterday's show. That's all you have to do. You go to blogtalkradio.com/ReeseOnTheRadio. And you can listen to what I said myself. I was calling it Watergate before anybody was. And now there seem to be drumming that beat. JC's writing me, oh, hush, whatever. What do you mean, oh, hush, whatever? Everyone's talking about it. And I was on it beforehand. I've been on it for months. And I knew what this was going to come down to. Wasn't like I didn't know.
We talked about a month ago. We talked about it when we talked about the Border Patrol.
That's right. We talked about it when we were talking about Arizona. We were talking about Arizona's
right.
Controversial law that would allow the police to deport anyone who suspectedly wasn't in the United States legally because they didn't have proper paperwork. Now here's how NBC reported it today. After months of not even reporting the fact that Daryl Issa, Republican of California, was holding these hearings and that Eric Holder was facing a contempt vote in the House. NBC, ABC, NBC wouldn't even report it. They wouldn't even talk about Fast and Furious because they thought that it was just Republicans on a witch hunt. Oh, it's no big deal. It's nothing. So what? The Border Patrol agent died. So what? They ran guns across the border to give to cartels and never followed them, and hundreds of Mexicans died. Here's NBC.
On our broadcast tonight, in contempt, the U.S. Attorney General in a huge fight with Congress over a gun case gone wrong. Now it's a showdown with the White House over executive privilege, and it's a story still developing. Nightly News begins now. Is NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams. Good evening. While the rest of the nation watches, Washington has blown up into a caustic partisan fight, and a showdown is coming over the power of the American president. Just tonight, a House committee voted to hold President Obama's Attorney General, Eric Holder, in contempt of Congress for refusing to turn over documents related to a badly botched sting operation involving guns and drugs in Mexico called Fast and Furious.
I got to pause here. Hey, Brian, little tip of the hat here, buddy. That's the United States Attorney General. He does not belong to Obama. He is appointed to serve the people, not the president. But you should know that, right? That's something you should know. Not President Obama's Attorney General. He's the Attorney General of the United States.
This contempt vote comes after the Obama White House, for the first time, invoked executive privilege. Charges of stonewalling and cover-ups are flying, the kind of stuff we first learned during the Watergate era. And for those not following the complexities of all of it, it just looks like more of our broken politics and vicious fights now out in the open.
Really, Brian? That's what it looks like? Are you kidding me? That's what it looks like? Border Patrol agent killed with one of the guns that were allowed to walk across the Mexican cartels. This guy gets into a shootout. He's shot through the aorta. Hundreds of Mexicans killed. And you're telling me it just looks like a beef? Just looks like a silly little argument?
And for those not following the complexities of all of it, it just looks like more of our broken politics and vicious fights now out in the open.
How could he possibly marginalize this? How? I don't get it.
We begin tonight with our Capitol Hill correspondent, Kelly O'Donnell, who was there to see all of it today. Kelly, good evening.
Good evening, Brian. There were emotions and allegations of political motives flying today. House Republicans say they have been waiting for 8 months to get documents.
8 months they've been waiting for documents. Just eight. Just 8 months. Subpoena documents. Just 8 months.
Good evening, Brian. There were emotions and allegations of political motives flying today. House Republicans say they have been waiting for 8 months to get documents from the Attorney General, and only today the White House stepped in. A key committee took an important step towards sending a message to the Department of Justice.
But our work is not complete.
A rare and serious reprimand. 23 ayes, 17 noes.
The ayes have it.
Eric Holder could become the first attorney general ever held in contempt of Congress.
The attorney general has refused to cooperate.
5 months before the election, a power struggle between the Obama administration and Congress.
It shouldn't have come to this. Nobody likes doing this.
It shouldn't be a political witch hunt against the attorney general of our country and our president in an election year.
Today, the White House asserted executive privilege to shield documents from Congress. For more than a year, the House Oversight Committee has been investigating an operation known as Fast and Furious. Federal agents had allowed guns to cross into Mexico, intending to track them to cartels. But some of those U.S. weapons were found at the scene where Border Patrol agent Brian Terry was killed in 2010.
I don't think Agent Terry's family cares that it's an election year. I don't think the families of over 200 slain Mexican citizens care that this is an election year.
Operation Fast and Fury.
If I may say myself, a frickin' men. They don't care whether or not it's an election year. They care whether or not guns walked. And whether or not people's lives were in jeopardy. And whether or not it was literally the handling of this department, the Department of Justice, that allowed it to happen and then covered it up.
Here.
Operation Fast and Furious was ended by Attorney General Holder, who has testified and already provided thousands of documents.
Oh, gee, thanks, man. I'm so sorry. Thank you for stopping it after you got busted. Stopped it after you got busted. Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Operation Fast and Furious was ended by Attorney General Holder, who has testified and already provided thousands of documents. The conflict with Congress began because the Justice Department initially denied those gunwalking tactics had been used.
I can give them this.
That denial raised many questions about who had authorized the operation.
Who knew about Fast and Furious? When did they know about it? And how high up did it go?
The White House insists Holder has made extraordinary efforts to cooperate. The Attorney General called the contempt citation a divisive election year tactic. Democrats defended Holder.
For the past year, you've been holding the Attorney General to an impossible standard.
Yes, a standard of telling the frickin' truth. It's impossible. It's just impossible for me to tell, for him to tell the truth. Right? Just an impossible standard. A standard that he set himself, right? When it first came out and questions were raised, we never sent guns to Mexico. We never allowed them to walk. A whistleblower comes forward and says, really? It really never happened? Well, you know what? Now you got my name. Now you got my face. Tell me to my face that it never happened, that I wasn't ordered to do it. And then they had to come back and say, yes, we did. So if you don't believe that we should be holding him to some sort of standard after he's caught lying, saying we knew nothing about it, and then to suggest that we are holding him to an impossible standard, he lied knowingly. He sent a letter to Congress saying that he knew nothing about it, and then months later retracted that letter, rescinded the letter, and said, no, no, we can't really say that we didn't know about it. So he outright lied. And he knows he did, knowingly lied. And I don't care if he's given up 4,500 documents. The ones that they want are the 1,300 documents, the ones that started from February of 2011 until December of 2011, when they knew the president knew about it. When the president suggested he knew nothing about it, says that Eric Holder knew nothing about it, and it turns out that he did. Email suggested he knew. Emails knew that his number two guy, Eric Holder's number two guy, knew about it. He was in Mexico talking about how they were going to cover it up, talked about how they were going to deal with it in the press. In a March email. So don't tell me that we're holding him too high, to a standard that's too high. The facts speak for themselves. And you can make this about the President of the United States, but really, really pay attention to this. Pay attention to, in fact, yeah, I'll say it now. Pay attention to this. At the time that this investigation was going on, the only questions that were asked of Eric Holder, the Department of Justice head, the Attorney General. No one at once even implicated President Barack Obama. Not once had they ever implicated him as to being someone who knew or a witness to this case. They never talked about bringing the president down there. It wasn't political. It was about Eric Holder and gun running. So the Democrats are suggesting that, look, this is just out to smear President Obama. This is just out to smear President Obama. President Obama's never, ever been a part of it until today, where he injected himself and then put out an executive order not to have the documents released. So here was nobody on ICE's committee had once suggested anything about President Obama. Now, what does this appointed Laurelton cop do? What does the Laurelton cop do? He tries to make a deal last night. He doesn't get it. And he goes crying to the President of the United States just as he returns from his trip at the G20 summit, begging for help. Daddy, help me. I'm going to get in trouble. And Obama injects himself to protect Eric Holder. Or is it to protect himself? I'll continue with the audio.
You accuse him of a cover-up for protecting documents that he was prohibited by law from producing.
The White House noted today that presidents of both parties have used executive privilege to protect some of their internal conversations.
But what's that got to do with it? What's that got to do with anything? See, now here's the news media trying to cover for Barack Obama. I have to play that part again. This is important that you hear this part. Well, actually, wait, should I stop it there? Okay, here we go. This is what I want you to hear.
The White House noted today that presidents of both parties have used executive privilege to protect some of their internal conversations. House Republicans say there's still time to avoid this and negotiate a deal, but they still want what they call a narrow list of documents. Brian, if there is no breakthrough, Speaker Boehner says the full House of Representatives will vote next week to hold Attorney General Eric Holder in contempt of Congress.
Now, they're bringing this up, okay? They're suggesting, oh, you know, other presidents have used it. You know, give Barack Obama a break. Give him a break. You know, this is not, it's not unnatural for this to happen. Yeah, come on, you know, executive privilege, yeah, we'll use that. 2007, George W. Bush in office used executive privilege about conversations between Karl Rove and I think it's Elizabeth Myers. Why am I forgetting her first name? But Myers, the woman he wanted to appoint as a Supreme Court justice, she had to withdraw. And on Larry King Live, Senator Barack Obama had this exchange.
Do you favor executive privilege, or should Karl Rove and others in that like position be forced to testify before the House or Senate?
Well, I think we'll determine over the next several weeks how this administration responds to the very appropriate call by Patrick Leahy, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, to have these individuals come in and testify. You know, there's been a tendency on the part of this administration to try to hide behind executive privilege every time there's something a little shaky that's taking place. And I think, you know, the administration would be best served by coming clean on this. There doesn't seem to be any national security issues involved with the U.S. attorney question. There doesn't seem to be any justification for not offering up some clear, plausible rationale for why these U.S. attorneys were targeted when, by all assessments, they were doing an outstanding job. I think the American people deserve to know what was going on there.
The American people deserve to know why 8 attorneys were fired on the governmental level. Yes, the American people deserve to know. But he doesn't think that the American people deserve to know how a Border Patrol agent was killed by guns allowed by this administration to cross the Mexican border and be given to drug cartels? Doesn't think that's relevant? Doesn't think that's important to know? So everyone in the media, well, with the exception of a few, you know, they're running for cover, especially of this administration. If you haven't read this already, let me give you a breakdown. In 8 years in office, Ronald Reagan used executive privilege 3 times. Nixon, I believe, used it 6 times. Herbert Walker Bush used it 3 times. George W. Bush used it 6 times. President William Jefferson Clinton, old Bubba, used it 14 times. Almost half of them were used to cover up the Lewinsky scandal. I find it incredibly odd. George Bush had two terms, used it 6 times. Used it 6 times. Ronald Reagan had 2 terms, used it 3 times, and he had Iran-Contra. Nixon, 6 times, he used it. Some of them on Watergate. He lost. Documents had to be released. Watergate, yeah. A crime took place. That's right. Crime took place. Nobody died. But you know those Democrats, they wanted to get his ass real bad. And they got him. Forced him to resign. They tossed that executive privilege right out the door. Barack Obama sees hundreds murdered. One of our own murdered by our own guns. And says the American public does not have a right to know. And Democrats are suggesting that Barack Obama, that this issue is being used as a campaign attack on Barack Obama. No one had injected him into this. No one even mentioned the fact that this had anything to do with an election year witch hunt. That's what Democrats have been making. They refuse to deal with the truth. Don't want to make any arguments about what happened. Haven't talked about Brian Terry. Haven't talked about the 100 Mexicans that were being shot and killed. They give a damn so much about Mexicans having legal status in these United States. But the Mexican cartels who are literally holding those people hostage. And forget about, and I haven't even started on what it is that they're doing in areas like Phoenix and in the border of Texas, where American citizens are being kidnapped, beheaded, shot at. And not only that, some of those illegal aliens. This is the interesting part. When Brian Terry was killed, Brian Terry got into a gunfight with one of the cartels that was using guns that the ATF allowed to walk. But here's the question. What's triggered that gunfight? The Mexican cartels were across the border on American soil shooting immigrants coming into the United States who refused to work with them in transporting drugs. So who in the hell is this administration protecting? They care so much about those illegals trying to come here to build a better life. The Mexican cartels that they were funneling these guns to were shooting those illegal immigrants they seemed to care so much about were being murdered, shot down, defenseless. Defenseless immigrants. You know, the ones they claim are so goddamn innocent. With their children, you know, being brought here by no fault of their own. And this administration, after making that astronomically unconstitutional statement about telling law enforcement not to enforce the law when it comes to people who came here through no fault of their own as children, not to exercise the law against these people, is now caught with their collective foot in their mouth by standing there and allowing those same innocents to be shot and killed by cartels that they pretty much armed and suggest that this isn't important to the American people? Mark my words, folks. Barack Obama is in those documents. Barack Obama's name is in it. He's attached to it. His name is in there somewhere. And I'm going to give you my own personal evidence as to why I know that he's personally involved. And it goes back to April of 2009, just two, three months into his presidency. Barack Obama's hands are filthy with this. Filthy. And he began this from the get-go. And it all had to do with gun rights in this country. The assault weapons ban. We'll take a break. We're going to play some more audio. Because, oh, plenty. You know I've got plenty. How's my connection now, JC? Am I any better? I got a lot of windows up, man.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm good? All right, I got a lot of windows up, man. That's just me right now. So I'll get into a little bit more, but everybody knows I was right. When we come back, we got to talk about bumping my ratings up, my accuracy rating. I think I'm going up a few points today. I think it's right. I think I should go up a few points. We'll take a break. It's Reese on the Radio. Stick around. Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you'd be stunned at some of the people who call up to spend some time with Reese on the Radio. He is the godfather of entertainment, Mr. Michael Lohan. Mr. Lohan!
Reese, I have to stop laughing before we jump in. I don't know how to respond to this. Am I in the Twilight Zone?
you are in the Twilight Zone. On the phone with us right now on Reese on the Radio is the connoisseur of the Hollywood biz, the father of the famed actress Lindsay Lohan. Mr. Michael Lohan is on the show on Reese on the Radio. Thank you for joining us today, sir.
No, thanks for having me, Reese. Going to be a lot of fun, I can tell already.
Oh, man, you have no idea how much fun we're going to have today. It's Reese on the Radio, weeknights, right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Mary, Mary, why you bugging?
James, you're on the air?
Yep.
Before you say anything, you are just going to come clean right now, okay? I'd like to know the adult beverage you enjoy.
I'm drinking beer.
What kind of beer are you drinking, James? Is it a 211?
Oh, man.
You're drinking a 211?
Yes.
You're drinking 211 Steel Reserve.
Right now.
The reason why it's called Steel Reserve and it's called 211 for that matter is that the police code 211 means robbery in progress.
And don't let me tell you what that 211 has stolen from you tonight, my man.
It's Reese on the Radio, weeknights, right here on blogtalkradio.com.
The Obama attack machine has started, spending millions to sling mud or oil at Mitt Romney. Why? Because in the five states where Obama's attacking Romney, gas prices have roughly doubled. But Obama's mud can't cover up his failed energy policies, policies that are hurting small businesses and working families. America deserves solutions, not attack ads covering up Obama's failures. 4 years of failed leadership are all we can afford. Send a message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Dude Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Bleu.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hey,
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're Robert Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
This is the real state of our union. But you won't hear stories like those at President Obama's address tonight. The unemployed don't get tickets to sit next to the First Lady. Instead tonight, the President will do what he does best. He'll give a nice speech.
The idea of America endures.
A lot of memorable phrases in it.
That our future is hopeful.
But he won't give you the hard numbers.
Our journey goes forward, and the state of our union is strong.
Three years ago, we measured candidate Obama by his hopeful promises and his slogans. Today, President Obama has amassed an actual record of debt, decline, and disappointment. I'd use the State of the Union to lay out an agenda that will get our country back on track and get our fiscal house in order. We need to nominate someone who is an experienced leader, who has the qualities of leadership, the character, the judgment, the seriousness, the sobriety, the capacity demonstrated time and time again as a leader to help guide our party at a critical time and make sure that we hold on to the House, that we capture the Senate, and that we get back the White House and restore to America what is rightfully ours, a great nation, united, free, and prosperous for our kids and for their kids. Thank you so very much.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on ReSun Radio, on blogtalkradio.com, weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
President Barack Obama named himself one of the country's four best presidents. Better than George Washington, John F. Kennedy, and even Ronald Reagan. But Mr. President was just being modest. He's in fact America's best president at piling on debt. So good that he has managed to pile on nearly as much debt as all the previous presidents combined. All he needed was just 4 years to outspend 220 years of history. We can't afford four more years of America's best president.
Warning, the sounds you're about to hear can be devastating to your ear.
I love it, I love it, I love it, I love it, I love it.
You're listening to Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com. Reese on the Radio, 32 minutes after the hour right here on Blog Talk Radio. Wacky Wednesday, June 20th, 2012. Plenty of stuff to get into, of course. This Fast and Furious thing is just, right now, it's reached that tipping point. So what happens will happen soon. The next week, the House will be making will have a vote on a contempt of Eric Holder, the Laurelton cop. Heard a great line today. His name should be changed from Eric Holder to Eric Withholder. I thought that was cute. I want to play this audio because it was something that I had mentioned that was said on the at the Senate committee today. And it's by my new favorite Republican. Now, Eric Cantor for a long time was one of my favorite Republicans. He gave me an interview back in 2008 during the Democratic National Convention. And he was great. He was a good guy. Very charming, loved his accent. But this guy, Trey Gowdy, South Carolina Republican, is my new favorite. I don't think there's anybody out there who can touch this guy. People always talk about Barack Obama's oration, the fact that he's a great orator. But this guy, Trey Gowdy, well, this guy put it in a perspective that I loved it. It's a little long, but it's so worth it. So I'm going to play it in its entirety. This is him today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Department of Justice, Mr. Chairman, is not just another agency within the federal government. The Department of Justice is responsible for safeguarding the fundamental foundation of this republic, which is respect for the rule of law. The department is symbolized, Mr. Chairman, by nothing more than a blindfolded woman holding a set of scales and a sword. She doesn't care about political agendas. She doesn't care about whether her decisions help or hurt people's reelection bids. She doesn't care about race, gender, socioeconomic status.
just the equal application of the law so all citizens can have confidence in the decisions that she makes. So it is against that backdrop, Mr. Chairman, that we look at the facts surrounding this investigation. Fast and Furious was fundamentally flawed in its conception, flawed in its execution, and flawed in its explanation afterward. And this is not, Mr. Chairman, as was initially the administration mantra, an Arizona investigation. Senior level officials within the Department of Justice in Washington knew about Fast and Furious well before Special Agent Brian Terry was murdered. Senior level DOJ officials were briefed. They discussed press conference opportunities. They discussed the unsealing of indictments. They traded emails about the status of the case. They approved wiretap applications. And most significantly, Mr. Chairman, they actively discussed the tactic of gun walking well in advance of Special Agent Brian Terry's murder and well in advance of a demonstrably false letter being written to a committee of Congress that was calculated to deceive and mislead. And here's the proof. Here, Mr. Chairman, is the proof that Department of Justice in Washington, not Arizona, in Washington, knew about the tactic of gun walking well before Brian Terry was murdered. So we have a fundamentally flawed federal investigation. We have a dead Border Patrol agent. We have hundreds of dead Mexican citizens, thousands of weapons with America's fingerprints on both sides of the border unaccounted for, and a demonstrably false letter being written to a committee of Congress, and yet we're being asked for more time. Please wait. Give it more time. It's been over a year, Mr. Chairman. If Congress has time to look into Major League Baseball, the BCS, and invite Stephen Colbert to come to a committee hearing, surely to goodness we have time to get answers on a fundamentally flawed, lethal investigation like Fast and Furious. And thus we have, Mr. Chairman. We embarked on an investigation to get answers to some pretty fundamental questions that I still cannot answer. When I'm asked back in South Carolina, who within Maine Justice approved this investigation? I can't give them an answer. When I'm asked who knew about gun walking and did nothing to stop it, I can give them this, but this is part of the answer because it's part of the documents. How did the demonstrably false letter get written on Department of Justice letterhead and delivered to a United States senator? I can't tell you how that letter got drafted. Why was it withdrawn after 10 months? Why did it take 10 months to withdraw the letter? Why was the criminal chief, to my friend Pat Meehan's point, why was the criminal chief of the Department of Justice in Mexico advocating for gun walking on exactly the same day that this demonstrably false letter was delivered to a committee of Congress? Can anyone answer that question? Can you tell me why Lanny Brewer was in Mexico advocating for a tactic that we all acknowledge is flawed on the very same day the Department of Justice was denying the tactic to Senator Chuck Grassley? Not only does Congress have a right to ask these questions, we have a fundamental duty to ask these questions. Our fellow citizens, the ones we're supposed to work for, when they get a jury summons, do you think they have a choice on whether or not to comply? When they get a subpoena from a law enforcement agency, do you think our fellow citizens get to offer an extraordinary accommodation in lieu of providing the documents? Either Congress has the authority to send a subpoena and require full compliance, or what we have been doing for the past 12 months is a fool's errand. And we never should have discussed contempt of Congress. Either we have the right to the documents and we should get all of them, or we have no business here. And with respect to executive privilege, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to resist the temptation to contrast Senator Obama's position on executive privilege with President Obama's position on executive privilege, but I would just note the juxtaposition is stark. If he was not part of the drafting of the February 4th letter, if he did not know about Fast and Furious before Brian Terry was murdered, if he did not approve of the wiretap applications, then what in the world is he asserting executive privilege for? He's either part of it or he's not. If he's part of it, then we've had a series of witnesses that have misled this committee. And if he's not part of it, then he's got no business asserting executive privilege, and I would yield back. Gentlemen.
Bravo. And this was the same guy, for anyone who's paid attention to this show, and I'm sure you have, Trey Gowdy was also the audio that we played some months back where he was talking to Kathleen Sebelius, the head of Health and Human Services, where he broke down to her the cases of religious freedom versus the Constitution, or pardon me, versus the government, where religious groups said they didn't want to have to, they didn't want to have to stop sacrificing an animal for their religious practices. They took it to the Supreme Court, and religious group won. They wanted to mark certain vehicles, and they didn't want to mark their vehicles in a religious group. Took it to the Supreme Court, the religious group won. You probably remember that audio. I'll see if I can find it for you, and we'll play it again. But I love Trey Gowdy, 4th District of South Carolina, Representative Trey Gowdy. But he makes a valid point. He makes the point that I made. President Obama has nothing to do with this. If he knew nothing about it, what's he inserting himself for? Who is he protecting, if not himself? Is he protecting Eric Holder? And why would he do that? If Eric Holder lied, and he misled the American people, and if he misled the committee, then he has to be held in contempt. Either be impeached, or removed, or both. But the bottom line is, something went wrong. I want to play another piece, because this is important. When George W. Bush was president of the United States, you heard when I played Barack Obama's statements, when he discussed executive privilege in concerns to President George W. Bush, he said this. We'll play it again.
Right. There's been a tendency on the part of this administration to try to hide behind executive privilege every time there's something a little shaky that's taking place. And I think, you know, the administration would be best served by coming clean on this. There doesn't seem to be any national security issues involved with the U.S. attorney question. There doesn't seem to be any justification for not offering up some clear, plausible rationale for why these U.S. attorneys were targeted when, by all assessments, they were doing an outstanding job. I think the American people deserve to know what was going on there.
So believes that the American people should go. Now, I want to play you this, and this is another clear example of liberal media doing what it is I've always said it does. It does. And that's attacking Republicans and then running, offense for liberals, which is exactly what they do. Now, please don't tell me I can't get this audio to play. That would suck if it didn't. All right, I'll set it up. I have to set this up. But this is a audio bite from Katie Couric at CBS News when she used to be the anchor there. And this is in 2007, talking about the same case where George W. Bush used executive privilege to stop people from getting documents related to 8 U.S. attorneys who were fired and the committee was trying to subpoena documents. I believe it was Waxman was the committee chair at the time trying to get those documents. And he was trying to bar Karl Rove and I'm forgetting her full name. Okay, this is Katie Couric.
This week, we've heard the term executive privilege a lot. The president used it to prevent his former counsel, Harriet Myers, from testifying about her role in firing federal prosecutors. But what does executive privilege mean? Scholar Norm Ornstein says it's part of a struggle as old as George Washington. His administration weighed how much information to give Congress during an investigation of a botched military campaign. It's not mentioned in the Constitution, but during Watergate, the Supreme Court endorsed it as an implied presidential power, and it's not absolute. And in Ornstein's view, it applies only to conversations involving the president, the executive at the heart of executive privilege. Others have a broader view and say it protects the president's staff. But it begs the question, unless it's an issue of national security, should people in power, including the president, really be above the law? That's a page from my notebook. I'm Katie Couric, CBS News.
Katie Couric, asking the question of George W. Bush, does it make you above the law? Oh, and don't think I don't have more. I've got plenty. Here's the senator, Harry Reid of Nevada. Same year, same time, George W. Bush, executive powers. Here's what he said, Harry Reid, okay? Senate chair, right? Right? This is what he said when he was asked back in 2007 about the same case.
Senator, what is your reaction to the administration's new executive privilege policy?
It's hard for me to comprehend how logically, politically, realistically, constitutionally, the president could do this. It's like saying, I'm king. And that is the country we live in. He is not King George, he's President George.
He is King George, not President George. So, you know, again, coming right back to bite them on the ass. Coming right on back to bite them in the ass. Let's take a call. The number's 347-308-8701. You're on Reese on the radio. Who's there? Hello.
Hello?
Hey.
Do you not know who this is? Do you
I couldn't
not
tell
know
the telephone
that?
Number. I couldn't tell the telephone number. Hey,
you
man.
What? Tell?
No, I didn't really look at the number.
Yeah, that's a problem.
What's going on, Mary?
Trying to make it home because I obviously cannot follow directions properly and got totally lost and ended up on the toll road and ended up in Tyson and it's been a nightmare.
Oh, okay. Well, were you calling in because you wanted to say something about this case or what?
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Oh, well, thank you for calling. We'll put you on hold. Thank you. Anyway.
Well, bring on some coffee, Mary.
You all just
wait
until...
We can get some coffee here in the studio.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you wait till I get there.
Well, come on.
I'm
in a deep monologue right now about this Fast and Furious. So, again, as I was saying, so, Harry Reid, Senate Majority Leader. He's not King George, he's President George. I can't believe it's unconstitutional executive privilege. Then Senator Barack Obama. No. He uses executive privilege whenever he wants to cover something up. Everything gets a little shaky. Katie Couric. Above the law, she says. Above the law. Using executive privilege. And now the news media? They're running around talking about, they used this before. They used this before. You know, it's not new. You know? That's been used before, you know? You understand. Other presidents have used this. Oh, sorry. I totally forgot my audio.
Conversations. House Republicans say there's still time to avoid this and negotiate a deal, but they still want what they call a narrow list of documents. Ryan, if there is no breakthrough, Speaker Boehner says the full...
Sorry, I'm going to play the original audio. Here we go.
The White House noted today that presidents of both parties have used executive privilege to protect some of their internal conversations. House Republicans say there's still time to avoid this and negotiate a deal, but they still want what they call a narrow list of documents.
And now the White House is putting themselves even in a bigger pickle because now they're sitting up here injecting this idea All other presidents have done this before, but you criticized it. So the White House doesn't have a leg to stand on. Not one. Now, President Obama is going to find, well, pardon me, but the American public is going to find out that President Barack Obama is somehow involved in this. Don't doubt me on this. Don't doubt me. The president is involved. I'm going to play a piece of audio that I played probably first month of this show. Back in April, the President of the United States, Barack Obama, in a press conference with President Felipe Calderon of Mexico, had suggested that 90% of the guns that were found in the hands of cartel members were coming from the United States. April of 2009, just a few months into the presidency. And the president had an idea. And the idea was very simple. If we could link guns going into Mexico with the United States gun shows, and we could link that in some sort of way, that we could make stricter gun laws. Because the assault weapons ban had pretty much not been upheld for years. Clinton did nothing about it. George W. Bush did nothing about it. They did not put the ban up. So there was an effort, clearly an effort, by this administration to create an issue that the American people would then be angered about and then be forced the hand of government to make stricter gun laws. Here's the scenario. It's very simple. Send a couple of guns over there. Don't track them. Nobody will have any knowledge of where they come from. Have a statistic that says, look at all these guns that got there. They came from the American people. They came from American gun shows. We have to stop them from selling these assault weapons because the country is outraged at them. Creating a dilemma. Rush Limbaugh said it best today. I was listening to him at work. He put it best. It would be like the American government no longer wanting planes to fly because, you know, they're ardently against fuel consumption in airplanes. So they make a couple of planes crash and make the American people outraged. And, oh, you know what? The planes are just not safe. It's just not safe to fly. Ground all these airlines, they can no longer run as a business, forcing people to drive. It would be the same thing. But people are saying, well, really, would it be that extreme? Well, I thought about it, and I said, hundreds of people dying in Mexico. I know Brian Terry is just one American who was shot and killed. I understand that. But there were hundreds of people in Mexico that were killed, targeted and killed with these weapons. Not just in the whole scheme of guns being in the hands of the cartels. We're talking about the guns that were lost by the ATF. That were hand-delivered to the cartels. These guns were responsible for hundreds of deaths. We're talking about 2,500 guns. 1,700 of them lost. And were solely responsible for the death of hundreds of Mexican citizens. Are we not supposed to care about Mexican lives? So he created a crime which would make the President of the United States culpable if indeed he is a part of this scheme. If he indeed was in any part hatching this plan to create a narrative at the expense of human lives. That's it. This report was April 2nd of 2009. Talking about Barack Obama's claims that 90% of the guns that were found in Mexico were coming from the United States.
Remember Remember the headline read, 90% of the illegal weapons used in Mexico's drug violence come from the United States. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said it. A lot of others also said it. We did some digging. It's not true. William Lajeunesse is live for us on a firing range in Paulden, Arizona, with a Fox News exclusive. William, how do you explain this 90% figure?
Well, basically, Trace, what the ATF has not really said is that they're not looking at all the guns coming out of Mexico. They're only looking at those that can be traced. Well, when you put that into the figures, and this is contrary to what they said publicly in front of Congress, only about 17% of the guns recovered at crime scenes in Mexico are sourced in the United States. What they fail to say is about two-thirds of the weapons Mexico never sends to the U.S. to be traced. And they have not been aggressive in making that distinction. And in fact, they blame the press as early as today, and some of their own politicians are making that inaccuracy. Trace?
The only thing that's scarier than the number is you with the gun, William.
So the figures were flawed. 17% of the guns that Mexican authorities grab are sent to the United States, and that 17% is the figure that they're using. They check that 17% of all the guns. They only get 17% of them. And 90% of the 17% that are given. That would be like sending over 17 guns and only finding out that 14, or in this case, 15 of them were obviously American weapons. But not telling anybody there's another swath of guns that we've never checked. So they use this whole narrative by saying, oh, you know what, 90% of the guns that are going over to Mexico, yeah, they're United States made. They come from United States gun shops. Not telling everybody the total figure. Two-thirds of them stay in Mexico and are never tested by the United States. Forensically, they probably knew the American public would figure that out, but you know what? If we run the guns ourselves and send them over there, we'll be stacking the deck, and no one will be the wiser. We just stack the deck. We're going to ensure that everyone knows that those guns came from the United States. And we sent them. But they won't know because no one will ever have the documents to prove it. Oh, crap. Brian Terry's dead. Brian Terry's dead. Oh, crap. The jig is up. The frickin' jig is up. Oh, I got plenty of people on the line today. Okay, guys, I hope you will stay on the line with me. We'll take a break. We'll come back, and we'll take your phone calls when we get back. The number's 347-308-8701. It's Reese on the Radio. Stick around.
Talking to African Americans about how they need to raise their children in two-parent households. This is not the way in which you endear yourself to a minority.
Reese on the radio, and we are back 9 o'clock on the Eastern, on the East Coast. Hot as hell, 95 degrees in the dark. couldn't get any hotter than this. Well, it could, but damn, this is ridiculous. This is just ridiculous. All right, I've got a lot of phone calls. I want to take Mike from Boston, because I know Mike. I know you've got a lot to say about this. But what do you think? Do you think that I'm somewhere accurate on this? That Barack Obama's, you know, he's got to have something's got to be said. This guy's got to be involved.
Hello.
Yeah. You're on. You're on.
Here we go. All right. How you doing, Reese?
I'm pretty good, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing all right. So, you know, I have nothing to back up what I'm about to say, but here's the deal. This doesn't surprise me at all, and it disgusts me. But the reality is the government has been doing this stuff for years. They have, you know, there's a reality that people feel when they're outside of the government, and then there's a reality that you learn when you get inside the government. On the work I do, I found myself working very closely with the government at some high level, and there's an expression that goes around, and it's, you know, never write when you can speak, never speak when you can nod, and it's been going on for years. This kind of stuff doesn't surprise me one bit, and you know, the funny thing is that people are just too busy. You know, they're not, their family's not directly affected. They're too busy for this kind of story to really focus in on how dangerous this is. You know, absolute power corrupts and absolute, what's the expression there? Absolute power corrupts and absolute...
power corrupts and corrupts absolutely.
And the reality is, this administration, that's how they operate. They feel they're above it all because they think people have their eye off the ball. They have too many things to worry about. They think they can get away with this. And the fact is, they probably will. You know, when I say get away with it, I don't think that this should kill this guy's re-election chance. I don't even think it's going to factor in. And you have an agent that's dead, and you may have Americans that they know have been killed. That's part of these documents. Who's to say that these documents don't illustrate the bullets recovered from Americans that have been killed from these guns?
Well, considering, I think there's a town in Arizona, and I don't know if it's Phoenix. I want to say, like, there's another, another really popular town in Arizona, and Flagstaff, Arizona, I think was voted like the kidnap capital of the world because of the Mexican cartels that were actually kidnapping people in that city. You know, who refused to either gun run or be a part of the drug trafficking or drug trade. I mean, they were kidnapping people from their houses. Even some American farmers had to start arming themselves down in that region from border crossers who were bringing in drugs. And the U.S. government was telling them that they didn't have a right to do that.
I mean,
this administration was doing that.
So here's my question to you, because here's where I'm not really savvy. At the end of the day, if he invokes executive privilege,
right,
does it end there? Is that it?
No, because then I would always send everyone, and a lot of people talked about this today. They're trying to avoid it. They've been sort of implicating it slightly. In fact, in the NBC News report that I played, they made that little reference to Watergate. Well, as many people remember, Richard Nixon tried to use executive privilege to keep certain information and documents out of the hands of Congress to avoid, you know, of course, to avoid his inevitable, you know, impeachment, if not him resigning from office. So the Congress ended up winning because what did they do? They took it to the Supreme Court and they won. They said, you don't have executive privilege on this matter. The documents have to be released. And, of course, it was his undoing. Because
you know, the amazing thing to me is this thing makes Watergate look like a page 10 story.
This is, again, and that's what I'm saying. Watergate was nothing more than a robbery. This was a murder.
Exactly.
This was a murder. And we're not talking about, I mean, we can make this about Brian Terry, but I think the grand scheme of this is like, forget, let's not be so myopic. You know, we may not like illegals crossing the border, but we still acknowledge that they're human beings. And we're talking about Mexicans that were killed in their own country. where they weren't committing any crimes. These were innocents in their own country who were being killed by a ruthless cartel that we supplied the guns to. We're culpable in hundreds of murders. It's an international incident.
That's all I have to say. It's just a frustrating story and one that I don't think is going to play out as I wish it would. But
the fact that you said that, how would you like it to play out? Do you believe what it should do is roughly, somebody should walk out in handcuffs here?
The truth is out there, okay? But the reality is we're never going to get it because that's just not how it works. So, you know, the truth is buried somewhere. And, you know, I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but I'm fascinated by government cover-up. And if you look back at the old Roswell story,
right,
a lot of people don't realize that, you know, when they came out with that Saddle weather balloon and they said, here we go, you know, it played well at the time. But there was also a gentleman on the commission to investigate that Roswell incident. He was a government guy, and he basically substantiated the government's claims and refuted everything. Very intelligent guy. I think he was a physicist. And 30 years later or 40 years later, he came forward and said his role was to refute any of the actual things that could not be explained, and then basically stand up the things that could be explained and show how that, you know, there was absolutely no truth to any of this stuff. So that's just, there's so many things here. I mean, the whole, you know, there are people who look at the birth certificate issue and have made it out to be a big joke.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there are things about that story that people aren't really focusing on. The fact that the document provided has layers.
Exactly. Joe Arpaio, you're right. Joe Arpaio, Sheriff Joe Arpaio in Arizona is getting laughed at about that. But you know what? Why would a scanned document have layers? I mean, it's a.
They didn't have layers back then, and on top of it, they're going after him. This is the best thing about it. They're not laughing at him. They're threatening him now. I'm fairly certain the Department of Justice is going after him.
They are, exactly. They are trying. They're trying to do everything to destroy Joe Arpaio, and the guy's done nothing wrong. He's done nothing wrong. All he did was question this administration. If this had been Bush, they'd have been applauding him. But the fact that he's going...
At the end of the day, this is par for the course. We've had evidence of this, in past administrations as well, but this administration, it's so blatantly obvious, and yet I honestly believe... You know, the public is just too busy and too worried about their personal lives because the economy's no good to focus in on what's happening. And these guys are doing whatever it is they feel they can get away with. And if this thing ends because of this executive privilege, I think it's a tragedy.
I don't think that'll happen because if anything, I believe that the more people start asking for Felipe Calderon, the president of Mexico, the more that people start asking him, listen, you responded when President Obama came out with this, you know, with this executive order to stop deporting students who came into the country. You applauded him and you came out with a statement. Now we find out that there's a contempt of Congress for Eric Holder for gun running. Hundreds of Mexicans were killed. Are you going to speak up for the hundreds of innocent lives that were lost in those shootings? Are you going to speak up for that? And if they demand him to speak and say, hey, President Obama, look, we're friends and everything, but you guys are going to have to answer some questions because you guys clearly say that you ran guns into my country. You put them in the hands of the enemy, the people who have been threatening my people. I want answers. And we've got to press. That's the only way this is going to stay in the media, and it's going to force especially Latinos and especially the Mexican community to start to question this president and its administration. That's the only way it's going to happen.
Questions start to become, though, which one do you focus on? Do you focus on this story or the security leaks at the highest level of the, leaking classified information?
Well, you know what you do? You compile them. You make them an issue. You say, it's this, it's this, it's this. You lump in Solyndra if you have to. You lump in GSA. You lump it in, all of it. You make sure that everybody knows this is this administration in 3 years. You want to make Iran-Contra a big deal? Look at what this guy's done in 3.5 years. You lump him in and you go after him. That's what you got to do.
I agree with you. I think the candidates, especially, you know, Romney right now is afraid to go there because he doesn't want to fall into this whole birther kind of, mentality, and that's what they'll try to do. They'll try to paint him as someone who's only pointing out the conspiracies. So I think Romney's playing it smart. He's not taking the bait. I think the people outside of the Romney campaign need to put a sharp spotlight on this stuff.
Well, considering how much money has been going into the Romney super PACs, I think that's what they're – right now, that's their mission. I think they're going to go after the Obama administration on all of these scandals, and they're going – because they can do whatever they want. They don't have to follow Romney's lead on this. All the super PACs can do that.
It's a fantastic show once again. Have a great day.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it, man. Thanks for calling in. Let's go to Mike, who was nice enough to congratulate me today in a tweet. Mike in Florida. So, okay, I've laid out all the evidence. I mean, what more can be said? And by the way, I have more. But what more can be said, Mike?
Well, I mean, it's obvious that there was a plot, just like you said, to change the public's opinion about the Second Amendment. And the really sad thing is, it was unnecessary because the Mexican cartels don't get their guns from American gun stores anyway.
Yeah, and
they get them. Not only do they get them from the Mexican military, because the cartels run the country, and they get them from the Mexican police. The cartels are so wealthy; they're like another country. Do you think they can't put in orders with countries that manufacture these weapons? Do you think they can't get the Chinese to run off crates and crates and crates of AKs with no serial numbers for them? Of course they can't.
I'm so glad you said that, Mike, because this is the second part of that report I just played earlier about that whole numbers game that the administration played with 90%. This is the second part of that interview, and this is what one of the former he's a former Border Patrol agent. I may be wrong, but he identifies himself in the issue. And listen to what he says when he was working down in Arizona.
The question is, where are they coming from? With more now, former Border Patrol agent and weapons expert Ed Head, where are these things coming from then?
Well, obviously, you can't buy a lot of these automatic-type weapons and so forth, these military-style weapons, in a pawn shop in El Paso and take them into Mexico. People just can't buy these guns in the United States. I think a lot of these guns are being diverted from the Mexican military. They're coming in from Guatemala. I remember during my career as a Border Patrol agent when an entire Chinese freighter full of these kinds of weapons docked in Ensenada on order from the cartel in Tijuana.
Can you give us a demonstration quickly, Ed? I mean, what are we talking about here as far as weaponry?
Well, for example, these two rifles, the one closest to the camera is a semi-automatic version that can be legally purchased in the United States. This is a fully automatic gun that can only be bought with permission from the federal government, literally. And this is the kind of gun people just can't buy. That's a fully automatic weapon. You have to have special permission from the government to even own a gun like this, or to even, if you have one, do things like take it across state lines.
Ed, Martha McCallum here. So what's your theory on all this? Where is all of this coming from, and who's making it more available to the people who these drug cartels?
Well, I think if you've got billions of dollars, which these people in the cartels have, you can probably do whatever you want to do. You can probably get guns wherever you want to get them. I think the fallacy with the ATF figures is that the Mexican government is reporting the guns they wish to report, but they're not reporting the ones that either they can't trace, they come from foreign countries, or that are diverted from their military and security forces.
And that was the report. So it was pretty much just like you said, Mike.
I mean, there was a statistic I saw that said that we confiscated 30,000 weapons or something, and 4,000 of them were sourced from the U.S., which meant that 26,000 of them couldn't be traced. The only reason a weapon can't be traced is if it doesn't have a serial number.
Right.
And weapons without serial numbers are, you think that was possibly a contract that the cartels put in with, I don't know, Norinco in China or the Russians or the Romanians or the Bulgarians or anybody? Of course.
And
the ones that were traced, who's to say what they were? Yeah, they could have been ancient pistols that were in Mexico for 50 years. They could have been stuff that was sourced from the Mexican army, because I'm pretty sure that we sell them their military rifle.
You know, and it's funny because Mexico is not going to send those guns to China to find out whether or not they're Chinese weapons. China's not going to acquiesce to the Mexican government and say, yeah, we ship them. They're never going to do that.
They're probably unmarked anyway. I mean, China's so corrupt that, you know, you could get somebody to run off a production run of these things with no markings at all.
It's again, the whole thing, and as I was expressing before, if they make this an issue, and I believe anybody in the press, because the press has to report this now, forget about it, it's out of their hands. This is bigger than, you know, to have a sitting attorney general be in the midst of a contempt, never ever happened in U.S. history. The press can no longer ignore this. So now they have to talk about Fast and Furious.
If you Google the phrase Eric Holder and guns, you can find a speech he did on C-SPAN in 1995 where he says that he doesn't believe that the Second Amendment protects individuals' right to own a firearm and that the American people need to be brainwashed to view firearms in a negative light.
I do remember that. I played that audio on the show.
And President Obama, when he was a senator, always voted in favor of gun control. And he's from Chicago, which is one of the most out-of-control gun control cities in our nation.
Isn't that interesting, though? Chicago, where he was senator, they have some of the strictest gun laws in the country.
Oh, yeah. You can't even own a handgun in the city of Chicago.
Exactly. But yet they have the most shooting violence in that
yeah.
city.
Yeah,
in the country,
figure, right?
Isn't that ridiculous? And again, everyone's made that argument. Every gun advocate has made the same argument. If you ever look at the statistics for how many places are running rampant with gun violence, they are the same places with the strictest gun laws. Every time.
Nobody goes on shooting rampages at gun shows or Dunkin' Donuts, do they?
Right. Exactly.
Right? You don't tend to do that kind of stuff where people are going to shoot back.
It's insanity to me that this is happening in this day and age. But you know what? I want to see it play out. I really, really want to see it play out.
Obama, I think, has kind of painted himself into a corner because you can't, in October of 2011, have Big Sis Napolitano say that the president knows nothing about this, or no, Obama said it. He knew nothing about Fast and Furious. And today he claims executive privilege. So you're claiming executive privilege over something that you knew nothing about?
Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly
over documents. Over documents you didn't see?
You've never seen. Eric cried to him and said, listen, the documents they want, they've got your name on them. That your name is in there somewhere. And if you're linked to this, you can forget about it. Okay? This is going to link you to it, and you know that the Republicans are going to then say that you actively and you were culpable in the deaths of people that you claimed just a week ago that you were trying to protect, and that is innocent Mexicans. And it is going to look bad.
How many hundreds, if not thousands? I mean, Mexico is a war zone. It's like Mad Max down there.
Yeah.
Thousands? Like 25,000 people a year die in drug violence down there?
Exactly. And to know that we are involved in any way in guns that we allowed to go down there, we're part of this, again, that we know what they're trying to protect. It's plain as day. He may claim to be the most transparent president of all time, but his tactics to cover up his actions are pretty transparent to me. We'll take a break. Go ahead, Mike.
He's as transparent as aluminum.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we got Morgan Freeman and kids being heckled by adults for singing God Bless the USA. It's Reese on the Radio. Stay right where you are. Don't go anywhere. Reese on the Radio returns in a moment right here on blogtalkradio.com.
The Obama attack machine has started, spending millions to sling mud or oil at Mitt Romney. Why? Because in the five states where Obama's attacking Romney, gas prices have roughly doubled. But Obama's mud can't cover up his failed energy policies, policies that are hurting small businesses and working families. America deserves solutions, not attack ads covering up Obama's failures. 4 years of failed leadership are all we can afford. Send a message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Jared Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Bleu.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hi,
how
you doing?
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're Robert Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
This is the real state of our union. But you won't hear stories like those at President Obama's address tonight. The unemployed don't get tickets to sit next to the First Lady. Instead tonight, the President will do what he does best. He'll give a nice speech.
The idea of America endures.
A lot of memorable phrases in it.
That our future is hopeful.
But he won't give you the hard numbers.
Our journey goes forward in the state of our union this morning.
Three years ago, we measured candidate Obama by his hopeful promises and his slogans. Today, President Obama has amassed an actual record of debt, decline, and disappointment. I'd use the State of the Union to lay out an agenda that will get our country back on track and get our fiscal house in order. We need to nominate someone who is an experienced leader, who has the qualities of leadership, the character, the judgment, the seriousness, the sobriety, the capacity demonstrated time and time again as a leader to help guide our party at a critical time and make sure that we hold onto the House, that we capture the Senate, and that we get back the White House and restore to America what is rightfully ours. A great nation, united, free, and prosperous for our kids and for their kids. Thank you so very much.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reese on the Radio, on blogtalkradio.com, weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
President Barack Obama named himself one of the country's four best presidents. Better than George Washington, John F. Kennedy, and even Ronald Reagan. But Mr. President was just being modest. He's in fact America's best president at piling on debt. So good that he has managed to pile on nearly as much debt as all the previous presidents combined. All he needed was just 4 years to outspend 220 years of history. We can't afford four more years of America's best president.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right. ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting. And you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on BlogTalkRadio.com.
Come on, players, stop hating. Stop hating. Stop participating. Stop participating. Come on, twinkle, twinkle, baby. Twinkle, twinkle.
Reese on the radio, and we're back right here on blogtalkradio.com, 25 minutes after the hour, on this Withholding Wednesday.
Withholding Wednesday?
Yeah, Withholding Documents Wednesday. Withholding Documents Wednesday right here.
Withholding directions takes me 2 hours.
Anyway, it's June the 20th, 2012. Okay. I gotta say this. I like this guy. I like him. I adore him. There's something about him that is extremely endearing. But then he opened. I mean, let me get to the point.
I thought you were
going to
talk about that damn Barack Obama.
No. I'm a fan of Morgan Freeman.
Oh.
I love his movies. I love his little, you know, anecdotes. When that Shawshank Redemption comes on, I'll watch that thing 3 times on TBS. They'll do a back-to-back-to-back. I'll watch it every time. I even actually smile when I hear him on his Visa commercials. You know, because he's got a great voice. Some people even refer to him as the voice of God. Because he's got a great, you know, he's got you know, one of those great voices. It's a great voice talent. He'll never be a James Earl Jones, but he's a great voice talent, and I love the way he speaks. It's just something about it just makes you think grandpa, you know?
Or if you're a female, honey, your husband.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know if that's, who thinks that he's a husband? They think of him as a husband?
His granddaughter.
What do you mean? Oh, the woman he married?
Yeah.
But we're not talking about...
I understand that. His personal life, that's exactly what I'm getting at.
He's a crumb.
Yeah, but you know what?
The only movie he ever made worth watching was Seven.
Yeah, that was a good movie. I'll admit. I like that.
And I didn't even like him in The Electric Company.
I liked him in The Electric Company.
Oh, come on, JC. Don't be a party pooper.
That's why I said his acting and the stuff he's done as far as an actor, he's been great. But I want to play this audio. This is...
say something about Barack
Obama. Of course he is.
God damn.
This is how uninformed he is. Because there are times when you look at him and you go, God, what a guy of wisdom. And then he opens his mouth on politics and I have to go, shut up. Shut your goddamn mouth. Because he completely throws me. Here's Morgan Freeman sitting on the couch talking to good old Tavis Smiley. Discussing Barack Obama and why he's going to vote for him and why he should be reelected.
I think that we did a really good thing when we elected Barack Obama. Read his books. They read his books. He is absolutely and totally qualified for the job. He's proven himself to be not only qualified for the job, but very good at it. The things that he's managed to get accomplished in the face of so much pushback.
By the way, what freaking election, what freaking presidency have you been watching?
It's amazing. And I think this is Morgan Freeman's personal thought. We're going to be in a lot of trouble if you don't reelect him. Because people on the other side of the fence scare me.
Who are the other people on the other side of the fence? White folks?
Republicans.
No, he got to be talking about white people. The only reason that moron, and I love Morgan Freeman, don't get me wrong.
Again,
so do I. The only reason your moronic ass voted for Barack Obama, which was the same reason that my moronic ass at the time, but I'm a reformed moron, voted for him was because he was black. and because he talked a good game, and because we wanted to do something for to be a part of doing something for this country.
Historic.
He was a pimp.
What?
He was a pimp.
Well, he's done great things for this country.
Like, what presidency is he watching?
What has he done?
So, of course, he couldn't lay out one damn thing.
Well, they didn't even ask him to lay out
one. And they won't. You know damn well Tavis Smiley won't. Tavis Smiley thinks he's done nothing for the poor. You think Tavis Smiley would challenge him on that? He of course nobody's going to challenge him. He knows it's another celebrity endorsement. It's another celebrity endorsement. It's somebody that people trust. We trust Morgan Freeman. You know, and it's a good thing for Morgan Freeman to support him. Mike, please say something that is going to make me laugh about Morgan Freeman.
Oh, wow. I mean, I don't know what to say. I mean.
How about Morgan Freeman?
I mean, yes, it's Morgan Freeman, for crying out loud.
You can just say, well, you know, we're going to be in trouble if we don't reelect him, but then you don't say why.
Yeah,
like, we're not in trouble now.
Well, yeah, exactly.
We're not in trouble now. He's done great things for the country.
That's what he's saying. Again, he's just completely cleaned Barack Obama's slate by saying he's done great things for the country, and if we, it's, you know.
He hasn't cleaned his slate.
Well, he's cleaned the slate for him.
He's updated the slate.
Yeah, he's very, really.
He's made some improvements.
He's writer embellished the slate.
I mean, everything's great. What with the 10% unemployment and, you know, we're moving, 13,000 troops into Kuwait now?
Right. Exactly.
And they're moving 3,000 troops into Africa. Did you hear that one?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
13.
Yeah, you know, wonderful. We're about to go head-to-head, go to war with Syria, with
right.
Russia involved in it. Oh, yeah, Barack's fantastic.
And China.
Yeah, with
Russia and China, because China is not down with whatever Barack Obama is doing. They're not down with it. Russia and China
hear,
did not sign on that.
Did you hear the story that came out about Putin basically punking Barack Obama when they had their meeting with the G10?
I heard this, and that's because everyone knows in the international, politically, international politics, everyone knows that Barack Obama is not only in over his head, but they can punk him. They know that he's got no pimp hand, you know.
Oh,
he's
a
not
going
to slack down anybody. Yeah, he's a punk.
You know how embarrassing it is when I see video of, you know, Barack Obama's on his time off and he's playing golf in his stupid shorts with his skinny legs,
right?
Or he's riding his too small bicycle wearing his mom jeans,
and I see Vladimir Putin
out there like tagging Siberian tigers and wrestling bears and kicking people's asses when he's doing judo and
riding a horse.
Yeah, he's a man.
Yes, exactly.
He's a real dude.
He's from the old school. And I'm sure Vladimir's going, oh, I'm so glad I don't have to deal with people like George W. Bush or maybe Ronald Reagan. I have punk black guy who is president of the United States who does not like to fight and is an anti-bullying campaign fundraiser.
And you would think that he's black, he would like to fight, right?
Well, of course not.
But if he's, I wouldn't step up to Vladimir Putin. That guy has actually killed people.
Exactly. He'll poison your ass.
I mean, the only person I would put up against him is maybe Jeffy the Body Ventura.
I might do that. But you know what?
Not at this age.
But you know what? Ronald Reagan would have stood up to Putin.
Oh, yeah.
Ronald Reagan probably would have
taken a seat as well, but.
You know what? America could have, Ronald Reagan and America could have stood up to Vladimir Putin when Ronald Reagan was in office. The state of this country today
is so passive.
The international community hates us. They think we are the biggest punks on earth.
Of course.
They have no respect for us.
Yeah, they would have done that to George Bush. They would have done
but
that
you
to
know
Reagan.
What?
But it wasn't even so much about the president. Well, it has to do about the president, I guess, too. It was the state of our country during those times when those people held presidency. The state of the United States of America at this moment is the worst it has ever been in history.
You know, I will say this, though. You know, you want to know why?
Y'all have, you know, listen, Mary helped to elect that metrosexual.
What?
You know, did Mary help elect that metrosexual?
I did.
Well, no. Hey, listen, give Mary credit, though. There are a lot of people out there who would make that choice, then stand by, even though they have buyer's remorse. Mary stood up, and she's taken her lumps. She's taken
Mary,
her lumps, said, you know,
Mary,
I make mistakes.
Huh?
Mary, do you hit yourself with a whip like that Opus Dei guy to repent for your sins?
Repent for your sins.
No, I have somebody else hit me with the whip.
Moving right along. Thank you, folks. Let me say this. What makes you ever notice why Pakistan and Al Qaeda cannot stand the United States even more now? It's a very, very strong.
We're invading their damn country.
No, I'll tell you why. It's very simple. Drone attack. Because they feel it though. You know, look, I got the whole feel that you don't us and you want to kill us. But just sending in machinery. At least make it fair. We want to be able to shoot back. You know,
isn't this the kind of thing that Nixon got in trouble for when he was, you know, an undeclared war in Laos?
Right.
You know, we were having attacks in Laos, a country that was supposed to be neutral, if not our ally.
Right.
And yet we were blowing up wedding parties in Pakistan. And now to top it off, a report comes out that they've traced cyber warfare against Iran to the U.S. and Israel.
Oh,
so we fly drones over them.
But, Mike, they didn't trace it. The United States government gave that information up. Stuxnet.
So how are we not at war with Iran then? If we're flying drones over their country and invading their airspace.
Exactly, but the way that we're doing it, it's in such a passive way. It's like a passive aggressive way. We're dealing with it from a distance. Let's not have our hands like completely on it. Let's not send our troops out there. We're going to use military drones. We're going to use machinery to attack this war. We're going to use cyber warfare. We're not going to send troops out there. And they're under the impression that we're actually winning this war. We're not winning the war.
No, we're not winning this war.
We're just
not with drones. We're talking about people who like to throw rocks and bottles in the street, and we have damn drones dropping rocks on them.
No.
We didn't win Iraq.
Right.
All we did with Iraq was throw that country into the Stone Age. We definitely didn't win Afghanistan, but nobody has been able to conquer Afghanistan since Alexander the Great.
Exactly.
Let us not forget.
The Russians had 20 years and they couldn't do it.
So what?
And it destroyed their country.
It bankrupted Russia.
Why
in the past have we been able to go into other countries and defeat them, win the war, and come home?
No, we haven't.
Not since World War II.
I can answer that. I can answer that. It's very simple. War simply works like this. The way that you win a war is through collateral damage.
Of course.
The bottom line is that how much of your crap can I destroy? Hiroshima, Nagasaki, ring a bell?
Yeah, exactly.
Sure, it killed some innocent people. But what are you forced to do? It's like, damn, they got an A-bomb that could take out a country? Oh, wait. All right, we're going to rethink this, guys. We know we're at war with you, but you got something that can take the whole damn thing out? Okay, all right.
And that's the last time we won a war.
That was the last time we won a war. And now...
We didn't win Korea. We didn't win Vietnam. We haven't won in the Middle East.
Right. Because we refuse to go out there and just, I'm not going to suggest nuke the place, but if that's what we got to do to win a war, we got to go in there, we got to say, oh, really, you got a problem with this country? You want to kill thousands? Listen to me. If Pearl Harbor, right, at the time, November 7, 1941, was the worst domestic terrorism or the worst terrorism on United States soil in history, and it caused us to go to World War II, and to drop those two bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, how in the hell does September 11th that killed 3,000 innocents, not military people, innocent people, doesn't make us go over
and
there
the
and just go
to kill
right and potential to kill more, if not the president of the United States, because one of those planes was definitely bound for the White House. If one hit the damn Pentagon, how do you not go over there and go kaboom?
Well, how come we go to the wrong country? You know, the planes were filled with what, Yemenis and Saudis, so the response is we attack Iraq.
Well, no, the attack in Iraq is 2 years after we go to Afghanistan. People seem to forget that. We went to Afghanistan in December of 2001. That's just some 2 months after September 11th. We don't go to Iraq until May of 2003.
But you remember still that Americans thought that Saddam was behind 9/11. I mean, how many interviews did
I don't know that, but I will tell you this. Was Saddam Hussein funding terrorism? Was he funding terrorism? Yes, he was. Was he saying that he had weapons of mass destruction since the mid-90s? Yes, he did. Was he saying that he was going to take those weapons of mass destruction and attack other Muslims? And let's throw some more dirt in the game. Let's look at the USS Cole. The USS Cole,
Yemen.
2000, under the Clinton administration. Who were the men who were brought to trial? Were there any Iraqis? Yes, there were. Iraqis were brought to trial for the USS Cole, and they were working with al-Qaeda. So to suggest in any way that Saddam Hussein was not funding al-Qaeda and didn't have any role in terrorist attacks against the United States is falsehood. When George W. Bush and Dick Cheney decided to go after Iraq, after going after Afghanistan, the idea was to go after hostile factions that were targeting U.S. targets. That was the bottom line. And weapons of mass destruction in a war against Afghanistan, the only thing Taliban had to do was have Saddam Hussein transfer those so-called weapons of mass destruction to them to fund their – I mean, well, not fund, but to arm that group to attack the United States after an attack like September 11th, we had to act. And making Iraq, freeing the people of Iraq, having an ally in the region, get rid of their violent dictator who killed 300,000 Kurds in one fell swoop, and giving those people their freedom was a benefit to this country. Like it or not, yes, we bombed them to the Stone Age. But,
Reese, come on. Now I gotta jump in now because you're basically sounding like Karl Rove here. No, there's no benefit to freeing the Iraqi people because the Iraqi people don't want freedom. They've never been free.
Well, wait a minute. If they don't
wait, let me go.
All right, I filibustered. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. Before Saddam showed up, Iraq was basically a loosely organized series of tribes. Saddam showed up and unified that country, brought them out of the Stone Age, and made them all learn how to read and be civilized people. Yeah, he killed some people. I'm not going to lie that he killed some people. But, you know, you see what happened after he left. It's an Islamic nightmare there now. You know, Saddam
was doing things. 300,000.
But 300,000 is a lot of people.
I don't care. Okay, Saddam kept the crazies under control.
Yes,
I'm not saying he was a good guy, but once Saddam left, look at it now.
It was lawless.
It's going to be lawless forever until it breaks into three countries. It's going to be Sunnistan, Shiistan, and Kurdistan.
Yeah, you're probably right about that. But hold on. Remember what George W. Bush said in 2007 about the Iraq War? He said that what was done in Iraq is going to then translate into other Arab countries. He said there will be an Arab Spring. And there was. If you look at everything that's happened since Iraq War, what have you seen in those Muslim nations?
How about Egypt?
Egypt. I'm not disputing Egypt. That's the only thing that's bad about Egypt is that the Muslim Brotherhood, what did they do? They took that opportunity to then control that part. I'm not saying that's a good thing. I'm saying, though, but the Egyptian people, what did they suggest? They did want their freedom. Why? Because of Iraq. Because of Afghanistan. Let's not forget Lebanon. I'm not Lebanon. I'm sorry. Let's not forget Libya. Those people, and don't forget about what's his name? Bahrain.
You mean the Libya where we backed Al Qaeda fighters?
Well, you know what?
To overthrow Gaddafi.
Only.
And now it's going to be an even worse Islamic state than it was before under the crazy Colonel.
No, that's only because this administration refused to go in there and nation build, which everybody keeps saying is a bad thing. It's never a bad thing to nation build. Never.
I have a kind of a belief that those people are, God, what's the word I'm looking for here? Savages? Okay. And there are some people who cannot handle democracy and really don't want it. Those people need strong leaders who are going to force them not to be Stone Age savages.
Well, you know what? Those countries, what they truly want is they want a true representation of Sharia law. And I have to be honest with you, Sharia law is a savage law, man.
Yeah, what with the clitoridectomies and the stoning for being gay. And
absolutely.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's terrible.
But that's why there needs to be some nation building there. I'm not suggesting that you completely eradicate Islam in those countries, but for crying out loud, you know, if you're going to base your nation on a archaic, draconian, what's another word I can use? It Stone Age view, like Sharia law, which is based on the Quran. Those people are never ever going to be free. Never going.
No, and we will tolerate it only if you have a lot of oil. Like Saudi Arabia.
Well, wait a minute. Like Saudi Arabia, we haven't occupied Saudi Arabia.
No, Saudi Arabia is one of our great allies, and they're the most oppressive regime in all of Islam.
Absolutely. Look, I agree with that. But you know what? I'll also make the argument, and I've made this argument hundreds of times. You know, when we went before we went into Iraq, we were receiving over 699 barrels of oil a day from Iraq before the war started in 2003. After we began the war, some 2009 and 2010, 2009, 2010, we were receiving less than 200 barrels less after we had,
well,
quote-unquote, occupied Iraq. So for
yes, because they blow up the pipelines.
Well,
yeah, that
come
on, dude.
Before we captured him. But the point
can't
is,
have a functioning oil industry when they're constantly blowing up the production.
But why would you go into a country and attack it and occupy, as so many people on the left suggested, for oil and only receive less? And
because it wasn't well thought out.
I know, but Donald Trump says it best in this regard. He says, listen, should we have gone in there and taken the oil? Look, we went in there, we attacked them, we won, we got rid of them. We should have gotten the spoils, and we should have, but we didn't. We didn't get the spoils. Everybody knows we didn't get the spoils. We pay all this money for the war. We're supposed to get the spoils. $797 billion on two wars. We get the spoils.
Well, yeah, we're also getting tons of opium and heroin out of Afghanistan now. They weren't putting out before. Let's not forget that one.
But you know what? It did debunk this. I'll tell you, Mike, what it did debunk, okay? It debunked the idea. And many, many liberals say this, and you can back me up because they always tout this in the black community. You know why the country wants to go to war? Because they make money. But what's the administration saying now? The reason why we're broke is because we were in two wars. I thought for all of these years before the Iraq war, we only went to war because it made us money. We only go to war. Now all of a sudden,
it makes private industry money. I mean, somebody's got to make the uniforms and make the MREs and build the weaponry. And let's not forget the huge contract that Blackwater got out of the whole deal.
Blackwater, Halliburton.
Yeah, I mean, the taxpayer gets screwed. We get nothing out of it, but private industry gets a lot of money out of the deal.
Well, and they should. Why shouldn't they? I don't know.
Well, you know what General Smedley Butler said? He said, war is a racket.
Oh, not if you're trying to promote freedom.
They don't give a crap about freedom. They'll ask the Cubans. That's the Cubans, Reese.
Yes. was going to go take a break. We'll let you respond. Go ahead.
You think that we take our
Hello?
Send them
Mike,
over.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, but I can barely hear Mary.
So you think that we let our innocent men and women of this country go over to other countries and occupy those countries just to
We don't occupy.
People?
We are
Whatever.
There to help.
We're there to help. That is to help those people?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Not at all. If we get Reese, my friend, look, I love you, but if we give two craps about people being free, there's a country 90 miles from Florida we can go free in an afternoon, and we don't.
Who's that, Cuba?
Cuba. And you know why we don't free Cuba? Because we don't need cigars and sugar cane, that's why.
Neither do they. Apparently, he shut down all the sugar cane factories in that country.
It's just ludicrous. I mean, we selectively care about freedom when it can benefit us, but we don't care about poor Cubans. We don't care about people getting oppressed in Tibet. You know, we don't care about godforsaken Africa, where, you know, how many hundreds of thousands of people got hacked against machetes? And we just kind of said, oh, well, sorry, black people.
I just can't believe it.
I don't think we should be in other countries trying to make them like...
All right, now, okay, now I'm just going to...
Yeah, we sense all these struggles over there.
Yeah, right? How do you send a fat woman to a country full of starving people?
To taunt them. Hey, if you come here, this is how you can live. I'm taking a break.
Hey, they should have sent fly swatters for them lips and them eyelids.
In most international countries, if you're overweight, they look at that as well.
I'm taking a break. We'll be back at Teresa on the Radio. I got to get into these kids getting heckled. Stick around. We'll be back.
Hi, Bill Maher here. Sarah Palin agreed to do commentary at Fox News, which is actually very similar to her day job, talking to a baby with Down syndrome.
Speaking of dumb
it's not because they have breasts, it's because they are boobs.
I hope Sarah Palin gets in so that they split the MILF vote.
That's not sexist.
I would like to announce a donation to the Obama Super PAC.
I thought about Malia and Sasha. I want them to be able to speak their mind in a civil and thoughtful way, and I don't want them attacked or called horrible names because they're being good citizens.
I would like to give that PAC $1 million. Sarah Palin, the strange family of inbred weirdos. She fucked Levi over and over until a baby fell out. The Maverick and the Milk. They fined CBS $1 million for Janet Jackson's nipple. Think what they could get for Hillary Clinton's cunt. That's not sexist.
All decent folks can agree. The remarks that were made don't have any place in the public discourse.
She is the chair of the Democratic National Committee.
I don't know any woman in America that thinks that being called a slut is funny.
Please welcome Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Being part of a democracy involves argument and disagreements and debate, and there's a way to do it that doesn't involve you being demeaned and insulted.
Speaking of dumb
this is a Category 5 moron we have on our hands, and I am unapologetic.
Top 10 highlights of Sarah Palin's trip to New York City. Number two, bought makeup at Bloomingdale's, updated her slutty flight attendant look.
I'm going to try to lead by example.
During the seventh inning, her daughter was knocked up by Alex Rodriguez.
To send a message to all our young people, I'm going to try to lead by example.
Speaking of dumb quads,
Maher decided to help President Obama out and give him a financial boost.
He's donated $1 million.
Last week, I said goodbye to $1 million.
I made a contribution to Obama's Super PAC.
This ends up being a teachable moment.
I wouldn't put anything past this stupid country.
All decent folks can agree. The remarks that were made don't have any place in the public discourse. I'm going to try to lead by example in this situation.
You're seeing a president adopt policies which affect our economy based not upon what's right for the American worker, but instead what's right for their politics. The National Labor Relations Board, now stacked with union stooges selected by the president, says to a free enterprise like Boeing, you can't build a factory in South Carolina because South Carolina
is a right-to-work state. That is simply un-American. It's political payback of the worst kind. It is wrong for America, and it is something that will stop under my administration.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Five minutes till the top of the hour right here on Recenter Radio. So I don't know whether or not anybody heard this story. I got to make sure that I mention this. The North Carolina teacher who we played the audio of. That's one thing, because this is I guess I'll talk about school. I know. Relax. So anyway, so she was suspended. We all know that she was suspended, but it turns out we find out that she was actually suspended without pay.
Good for them.
But she will be allowed to return to work next year with pay, but she's going to have to take like some training courses. They're forcing her to take all of these courses on how, I guess, some sort of civility courses or something along those lines.
No, what they're saying is, look, you effed up. This is what you got to do. We can't help you this time. I mean, the boys got you on tape.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're going to have to take a little break without some money, take a couple of classes like you got a DUI.
Yeah, pretty much. So, yeah, so
and
she's going to return.
Come right on back to work.
She's going to return to work.
And don't do it again.
Okay, so this story, when I saw this, I was a little freaked out. This is apparently there was some campaign rally in New York. PS90 in New York, in Manhattan.
A mental rehab.
Yeah. PS90 in New York. The kids were supposed to be singing God Bless the USA, a song that a lot of people remember. But apparently they were not allowed to sing it because the principal thought that the song was too divisive and it alienated some particular groups. So there was a rally outside of the school that was going to allow these kids to go out and sing the song anyway, since they weren't allowed to sing it at their graduation. By the way, even though they weren't allowed to sing this song at this graduation or this ceremony, they were allowed. They were allowed to sing "Baby" by Justin Bieber. So they're outside. This Representative Bob Turner is out there, Republican from New York, who's running for Congress. He's out there with them. And the kids are out there singing, you know, God Bless the USA. And parents and other adults came out there and heckled the kids. One parent went so far as, I don't know if he's a parent, but I know he's an adult. This one black man went so far as to suggest that the kids were going to burn in hell.
Oh,
here's
God.
The audio. Okay, I got to fast forward.
Kids don't know this either. You got something to tell me, say. Sad, sad. Yeah, burn in hell. You don't burn in hell.
So the adult is screaming at them, you're going to burn in hell for singing God Bless the USA.
You have to look up this video on MRC TV because see the man, he's like looking right at them like, you're going to burn in hell. You're going to burn in hell. I can't believe you kids are doing this. You're going to burn in hell.
Telling kids they're going to burn in hell for saying God Bless the USA.
By Lee Greenwood.
Are they the Westboro Baptist Church?
I don't know.
But, I mean, and he's you know, he's decently dressed. He doesn't, you know, appear to be like any kind of...
weirdo.
Yeah, doesn't appear to be a weirdo.
He looks like a well-dressed bum. He's like a recovering alkie or something.
Some parent should have kicked his ass and left him bleeding in the street.
Some of the parents there, you got to see this one tattooed freak. He's got a tattoo on his neck. Do they even know what the red, white, and blue means? Do they even know what the red, white, and blue means? I mean, it was... hold on, I'm going to fast forward it to that part. Here he is.
I got more education than all of y'all. Prove it right here. You don't even know your fucking sight means. What is the red, white, and blue mean? Nobody knows. Nobody knows.
And here's this crazy.
Wow,
hold
these
on.
Adults? I mean, these are kids. It's these are little kids.
But the scary part is
little kids.
Look at the ethnicity of little kids. These are Latino and black kids screaming at a white guy, or probably, assumably white, but whatever, they're screaming at, these are...
I think it was Latino. He's like, I got more education than you. You prove it. I got more education than you.
But these are blacks and Latino kids being shouted down by parents saying you're going to burn in hell and you don't know what the red, white, and blue and the stars and the stripes stand for. I can't believe I'm seeing this.
Hey, did you see the woman that was with the black guy? She had on, like, the 19...
Yeah, I saw her.
I turned a nut bush wig.
Yes, yes, I saw her.
Summer teen, summer yellow, summer missing.
In the words of Clint Eastwood, some people just need killing.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, you're right. I love that one. Yeah.
They do.
Some niggas just should be killed.
All right, guys. Time to wrap it up.
All right, guys. It's been a great show. Thank, of course, Mike in Boston. Of course, our good
friend. Thanks for the coffee, Mary.
our friendly neighborhood white guy. Mike in Florida, as always. Mike, please, you know you got to open rain here. We love you. You got to make Mike a part of the show.
And now we know that Mary likes to be whipped, so we learned something new.
Yeah, what did we learn, Zach?
Good night, folks.
Good night. Mike is part of JP, the producer, and Mary, Mary, why are you bugging up? Peace on the radio. Have a good night.
Good night, John, folks. Peace.